Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Well, incredibly sad news and enormous international reaction to the death of Taylor Hawkins. Really sad, and he's only 50 years old. And it struck me, what a sad story. And it struck me that I can remember that he did an interview with Steve Lamacq about 2 years ago, a little documentary thing for Six Music, called a kind of drumming workshop. And I remember watching that and thinking when I did that we often don't really appreciate drummers. I mean, I think we appreciate guitarists, we appreciate keyboard players, and we appreciate frontline musicians because we have a kind of frame of reference for what they do. But drummers, what they do is so technically complicated and hard to comprehend that I think we can't quite evaluate who the good ones are and who the bad ones are. And in this interview, he's really, really interesting and can impersonate all the drummers that he really likes. He talks about John Bonham, that kind of lazy, thudding, tub-thumping, kind of pulverizing, you know, blood-curdling sound that he makes, you know. Alex Van Halen, kind of fireworks, kind of incendiary sound. Jeff Porcaro. But his two great favorites are Roger Taylor of Queen and Stuart Copeland of The Police, which is also interesting because they're both trios. So it's one of those bands where all of them are kind of lead instruments and they're really different. They're big kit drummers. And he says Roger Taylor is basically this kind of this enormous, vast, great sound with quite a lot of detail, lots of interesting things, lots of cowbells, lots of little bits of percussion that you don't expect. Lots of big flourishes. He used to learn his entire drum solos. Of course, you can learn a drum solo because no one's going to say, that's so-and-so's drum solo that you're reproducing. And the other one was Stuart Copeland, who does this kind of really, really driven propulsion with lots of internal syncopation. And I thought that was very interesting. And also, I thought it was very interesting at the end of this interview where he talks about how he was in the Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
And had become big pals with on the festival circuit with Dave Grohl, who just started the Foo Fighters. This is 25 years ago. And he said they absolutely fell in love. It was a kind of bro-ship. And he just adored this guy. And Alanis Morissette said to him, when are you going to join the Foo Fighters? He said, well, I'm never going to be asked. You know, it'll never happen. And when he was asked, he left one of the biggest bands in the world, the Alanis Morissette band, for the Foo Fighters. And the reason he did it is because you will never make a name for yourself in a band that's for a solo artist.
No, that's true.
You know, you can only make a name for yourself in a band. I thought that was a really interesting point. You know, Paul McCartney's had the same band for 25 years, and unless you're one of the people who goes to his concerts...
Yeah, no, can you remember the name of any?
I can't remember a single name of any of them. They're amazing.
Now, oddly enough, I would recognise them if I bumped into them in the street, but I wouldn't know their names. I'd have to go and look up their names. It's really true. That
yeah, Brian Ray and Rusty Anderson are the two guitar players. You know, and they're amazing musicians, but you cannot make a name for yourself, you know. So his whole thing was, I want to be in a band. And in that
because
band,
Alex is... Character. Alex Felix is our kind of Foo Fighters correspondent. But he wasn't the first drummer in the Foo Fighters, was he?
No. William Goldberg, I believe, was... I think that was his name, was the live drummer around the first... the first couple of records Dave put together on his own, so he played everything on them. And then he put a band together around him to take it out onto the road. And there was a different drummer, which he ended up firing, I think, some kind of creative differences. He asked Taylor to join, and he was just the absolute perfect fit, you know. It's really upsetting on so many levels, because obviously there's that great bromance, you know. It feels like the end of a romance somehow, because, you know, you think of the Foo Fighters and you think of Taylor and Dave, and they're two sides of the same coin. And, you know, all the bands that I really fell in love with, there's some kind of relationship, there's some kind of duo relationship in there. You know, it's Noel and Liam, or Pete and Carl, or Taylor and Dave, and or John and Paul. And that somehow makes the band even more real, you know.
It does.
It gives it more emotional kind of...
No, purpose, it's really but, true. It's what yeah. bonds you to a band is your relationship with the relationships within the band.
Clarence, you kind of feel like in some way you're in it.
Yeah, Clarence
and Bruce.
It was
so dynamic as well. People like that, I mean, you know, you thought of Taylor Hawkins and you just kind of thought of pure energy, a complete lightning bolt of a person, you know. Every time you think of him, he's moving somehow. And, you know, these people on some level, you kind of feel like they're somehow immortal because of their just inherent dynamism. And just to kind of to get the notification on my phone saying this guy has stopped working, it just feels really bizarre and surreal, and you know, and also having got sober 20 years ago, having put all that effort into getting clean and staying clean, and for at 50 to effectively top yourself with a cocktail of what, 10 drugs. It just feels like a real crying shame.
I mean, it is a terrible shame. I mean, in any circumstance, but it just goes to show you do not know.
Make it clear that it was obviously accidental, and we don't know. And that's just what the reports were saying.
And you just never know, you know. And if people are, if their profession means that they are regularly giving interviews where they kind of talk about their personal circumstances, they will tend to overstate those one way or the other. You know what I mean? It's just a natural thing, you know. Yes, I'm completely clean. Yes, I've quit all that. So you don't know if that's the truth at all, you know, because the truth is they're just getting by like anybody else, you know, albeit via private jet. You know, it's the same human tragedies that you know, exist in any street, really. It's very sad.
But he was so charismatic, wasn't he? And I think a lot of that was due to his incredible looks. You know, he looked like Robert Redford around the time of Butch Cassidy, but with kind of
except
long
he was
hair.
50. Except he was 50.
Was 50.
That's a really odd thing.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Incredible looking guy. Really, really charismatic and funny. Yeah. People adored him.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So I've been reading this piece in The New Yorker about a place called Latitude Margaritaville in Florida. This is a retirement community branded with Jimmy Buffett. His famous song is, of course, Margaritaville.
Which, interesting, the opening line of which is nibbling on a sponge cake. So that seems to be very, very appropriate somehow.
I thought it was absolutely fascinating, this piece. Very long piece in The New Yorker. It's really worth reading. Because what emerges from this is that apparently the only member of the kind of baby boomer generation of rock stars who has the kind of brand values that naturally translate to the whole area of retirement relaxation is Jimmy Buffett. It's not Paul Simon.
No, no,
it's not Paul
point.
McCartney. It's not Bob Dylan. It's not any of those people. It's Jimmy Buffett. Because Jimmy Buffett, the whole idea is that he's He's got his feet up, hasn't he?
Yeah,
wearing
yeah.
her white
and he's
shirt.
Looking back at his life with a certain amount of regret and remorse. But yeah, it's true.
And he's got a margarita at his right hand, you know, and he's always ready to knock off another song, you know, about his life. And there are clearly huge numbers of people in America who really identify with the life that Jimmy Buffett has presented and celebrated in his songs for a long, long time. Yeah. Like now, you know, it's sort of, what is it, 40, 50 years, you know. And apparently there are a number of these retirement communities in various different places in the United States. Of course, they're all mainly in Florida, which is, of course, one of the things that comes out from the story is that all these people have fled their their cold, high tax-paying states in the north of the United States to go down to the south of the United States where it's warmer and you don't pay so much taxes, and you probably therefore if you worked there you couldn't afford to retire there. You know, that's the irony. But they all go down there to kind of it's Trump state, isn't it, really?
Yeah, completely.
And what they all say is they've learned to keep off the subject of politics within Latitude Margaritaville, because you can't assume that just because a person likes the same Jimmy Buffett songs that you do, that you're going to find any kind of agreement with them.
Any common ground.
On other issues. And I thought it was just absolutely fascinating. And I was wondering if there are other... possibly. Are there any other rock stars that you might similarly wish to go and spend your retirement in a community branded with this particular rock star? There's some suggestions here.
I saw them. I thought they were really, really funny.
Some very tongue-in-cheek from John Rowland, who paints a picture of a retirement community where the folks sit around refusing their meds and muttering bigoted comments under their breath. Not much changes from day to day. Welcome to the everyday is like Sunday.
It's great, isn't it?
It's very good.
I think there was a lovely one. Somebody mentioned In the Land of Grey and Pink.
Yes.
I thought it was absolutely priceless. Sorry about the voice. I thought it was really, really funny. You'd hope it would be in Canterbury and there'd be a load of people sitting around, you know, in kind of deck chairs, sort of, singing Golf Girl and stuff. You know, it's an old caravan reference, isn't it? It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
And also Ichiku Park. That's a great idea.
Yes.
Ichiku Park's a great idea. A mod, old mod's retirement home. People with very kind of fiercely creased trousers and purple hearts for 11s.
Billy Hush says... on a similar dystopian theme to John Rowland's Every Day is Like Sunday retirement village, he said he imagines a place called Strange Town.
Yes,
which is exclusively for Paul Weller modernist obsessives. And he has to have a dress code so fastidious he can't get in himself. So you've never fancied yourself in a kind of, I don't know, canned heat retirement to village or anything like that.
I fancy myself, Barrytown for Steely Dan.
Oh, yes.
Electric Ladyland would be good, I think. You won't call it Electric Ladyland. Or Mars Hotel or Shakedown Street for...
I think the Grateful Dead kind of, leaving aside the question of their name, I think they very much lend themselves to
they
this
do.
Kind of thing, actually.
It's comfortable retirement. It's capacious shorts, isn't it?
Yes.
A large cocktail and a lot of snoozing.
So if anybody's got any suggestions for, rock-related retirement communities that they would very much like to see, get in touch.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
So we've been enjoying this book, Exit Stage Left by Nick Durden, The Curious Afterlife of Pop Stars. And we actually recorded a chat with Nick about this.
It was really good.
Which was really good, will be appearing sometime in the next few days. And it's basically, we're fascinated by this business. We've always been fascinated professionally by this business that, people have their moment in the sun. And then it's the question of how they deal with, the moment afterwards, the afterlife, you know, is eternally fascinating. Because if you're a rock star, what happens is you kind of, one day you're a normal human being, then you're a rock star, but then being rock star kind of stops. You have to go back to being a normal human being again. And the book is about how people deal with that. And anyway, one of the things that came up in the book again and again is people reflecting on their moment of success. And they'll tend to always say the same things. You know, we were on Top of the Pops, or we were on the cover of the NME. And I thought this was really interesting, because those two achievements were the kind of the dream objective of everybody who started a band at the age of 17 or 18.
If you'd achieve one of those things, you could almost retire, couldn't you?
You could. Everybody knew what that meant.
Being on Top of the Pops, and I think it was Neil Arthur saying to the camera, saying, "Hello, Mum," you know, or "Put the kettle on when I'm home," or something, because that's the kind of big moment. You have finally made it. You're on Top of the Pops.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Absolutely. Top of the Pops, and then in the kind of indie world, you know, being on the cover of the NME or a Peel session, or
just
whatever.
The John Peel show. It's a play. There were groups like Bogshed would have kind of, you know, they would have formed in order to get played on the John Peel show, and having been played, they could pretty much think that they've achieved all they set out to achieve and split up, you know.
I just thought it was interesting to wonder, given the decline in the importance of those kind of conventional media moments, the Top of the Pops, the enemies, the John Peel show, what are the things that bands, you know, young bands, dream of? And I was asking this on Twitter, you know, and lots of people said, oh, I dream of a fair payment system for Spotify and all that kind of stuff. Well, I don't think that's not really what I'm asking, you know, because I don't think anybody at 17 dreams of that. You know, they don't dream about having a decent retirement at the age of 65. What they dream about is what they might achieve in the next year that will somehow communicate to all the people they grew up with, or all their family, or all the people they live near, that they've kind of arrived. And once you take away those kind of old media markers, how do you do that? I don't really know.
I've just dug a couple out. I've got to just show them to you, actually.
Oh, God. This is Wah.
So, yes. Wah, this is Wah on the cover of Smash.
Yeah.
And here's another one, which I thought was another classic. That is Strawberry Switchblade.
Strawberry Switchblade.
On the cover of Smash Hits. Now, my contention is that both Pete Wiley and Strawberry Switchblade will have printed copies of that magazine hanging somewhere in their house.
Yeah, they will.
Then they will, because that's how you explain to your nearest and dearest and your grandchildren or whatever that you had achieved something.
Yeah,
don't you think?
Yeah.
You know, I can remember that all those people like Set the Tone being on the cover of the NME, Virginia Astley, Secret Affair, the Au Pairs were on the cover of the NME. Will they have copies of those things? Yes, indeed they will. because it's the physical proof, isn't it?
They're trophies.
They're trophies that indicate success.
And in the world of media that we live in now, you can't have that anymore, you know, because you may, you know, like various people suggest things like Owen, our friend Owen Parker suggested for quite a while, the dream of a young band was having a sink on One Tree Hill, the American drama. And he says for the 18, 19-year-olds in bands that he knows nowadays, it's the possibility of going viral on TikTok. And undoubtedly, those are...
But it is, but it's not...
They're really powerful.
You can't physically show anybody.
No, it's fleeting, isn't it, by its very nature?
And it's gone within seconds, exactly.
You need to be able to, you know, years later, if you're on Top of the Pops in 1984... Well, you can get a tape of it out and say, look, there I am.
Yeah, it'll probably be on YouTube. Exactly.
In between Queen and God knows what, you know, I was once there. Tim Collins says that the nearest thing to it nowadays is an acoustic cover version on a Christmas ad. And thinking about, you know, like a John Lewis Christmas commercial sync, you know, would achieve a certain amount of that.
But that's somehow not about your personality, isn't it? If you're on the cover of a magazine, you know, clearly there's something charismatic, sufficiently charismatic about you to make them want to put you there.
Yeah. So I still don't know what it is that, you know, the people, you know, I can see you have certain things they want to achieve in terms of career. I can see that and making money and so forth. But, you know, when somebody starts a band, they're not thinking about that kind of thing. They're thinking of what they really want to do at root is prove to their parents and the people they went to school with that they didn't completely waste their time. That's what they want to do, isn't it? You know what I mean? That's what drives them more than anything else. Because if you're in a band that failed, and most bands fail, there's a part of it that's kind of funny. If you're in a band that made it at any level, you've got a certain amount of dignity.
You have.
You know,
you're feeling
for the rest of your life, you know what I mean? You're a member of the Nashville Teens or Strawberry Switchblade or whatever. They can't take that away from me. That happened. And there's the proof. And now we live in a world where it's a lot more difficult to establish the proof, to show your bona fides, I suppose, show your medals. To show your medals in the future will be a lot harder than it was in the past.
Aren't they? Precisely.
The Word Podcast. Fix yourself a drink and it's like being in the pub.
So Mark and I both got given this week special frames into which you can put the covers of 12-inch albums to use them as wall decorations. I've never had one of these before.
I
thought we'd play a game. We'll play a game, Alex, with it, which needs your involvement in this.
Okay.
And this is we're going to play a game of kind of quick draw LPs here. Okay. So both Mark and I have taken a record, not entirely at random, from our individual collections, and we've chosen to put its cover in this frame. And we're going to hold them up, okay, and see if you recognize either of them. And then you're going to judge, Alex, which one is the coolest, okay?
A style-off.
It's a style-off. Are you ready, Mark Helen?
Yeah.
Are you ready? Okay.
Let's do it.
I'm going to give you a countdown. Okay, 3, 2, 1, go. Oh wow.
Oh, that's good. Wow. Yours is good. But I think surely mine has a little bit of style.
This is gonna mean a lot more to our Patreon supporters who are, of course, watching this. While other people are simply listening. So, right. Would you like to describe what you're holding up, Mark Ellen?
Well, I'm holding up the first album by the Wailing Wailers. It's so brilliant. There's a little picture of Peter Tosh and Bob Marley and Bonnie Livingston on the front. This was in the mid-60s. And it's this wonderful sleeve with this kind of with the kind of detail of the kind of teardrops falling.
Right, yes, absolutely.
And they're doing versions of things like What's New Pussycat, you know, all the big hits. And
it's
just an absolute... it's one of my favourite bits of album design ever. I think it's cool.
That's very good. Okay, well, mine is rather different, probably from only a few years later. This is called Cruising with Reuben and the Jets. This is obviously a record made by Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention in the late 60s. And I think if you look at the kind of speech bubble here, it actually says, is this the Mothers of Invention recording under a different name in a last-ditch attempt to get their cruddy music on the radio? Okay. So it couldn't be more different from the Wailing Wailers cover. You know, the Wailing Wailers cover, which is really straight and sincere.
It is.
This is sarky and post-psychedelic, if you like. Okay, so we're going to hold them up, and Alex, you're going to judge. Okay? What's it going to be?
Right. Oh, gosh.
What do you think? Go on, I have to hurry you.
I've got to say that yours edges it, I think, Dave.
I win with Cruising with Reuben and the Jets.
I think graphic designers would have gone for mine, but you know, there we are.
Absolutely.
I'll take it on the chin.
Okay. Well, what else have we got in any other business? Well, of course, we've announced our June the 18th Word in Your Park taking place in Holland Park in Holland Park, London. Yeah. Which is, we are going to celebrate Paul McCartney's 80th birthday. And so you should already have had details of that and opportunities to book. We'd love to see you there. We can guarantee you the weather is going to be fabulous. We're doing it in the wonderful kind of covered amphitheatre of Opera Holland Park through their good offices. If anybody who came last year will know what a fantastic day people had. Licensed bars, not far from your seat, opportunities to meet and greet other members of the Massive and be entertained and stimulated and who knows, even provoked.
And a musical element too. I think you're having a ukulele element.
Yes,
Paul McCartney song. So
yes,
it'll be highly entertaining.
So if you're the kind of person who can play a Paul McCartney song on a ukulele to a passable level, you really ought to be getting a ticket for this. So full details. Where can people find full detail, Alex? Will they be under this podcast? I suppose they will.
Yep, they'll be in the show notes, and there will also be a ticket section on wiyelondon.com.
Okay, wiyelondon.com. Make sure you check that out, as they say on the radio. Is the Oscars? Is it the Oscars tonight? I won't be watching, but I've fallen down a rabbit hole recently of watching 80s films, and I watched Broadcast News in the last week.
Oh, I saw it too. It's on Disney Plus, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And also that then led me to, I'll tell you what I watched last night, which I haven't seen for years, Working Girl, Melanie Griffith and Harrison Ford, Mike Nichols film. Actually really good, good film. But in both cases, you look at, in certain scenes, you look at Holly Hunter is the female star of Broadcast News, and Melanie Griffith is the female star of Working Girl, and you think, my God, the things that were done to women's hair in the 1980s. It is genuinely breathtaking.
Holly Hunter, in virtually every scene in Broadcast News, has a completely different do going on. Kind of frizzed up and then weird Lady Di type flicky fringes, little bubble perms.
It's just ridiculous. Think,
how much of that will come back? It's probably never. I don't know.
Well, never. Because the male stars in both cases kind of look pretty much the same as they looked ever since. You know what I mean? Nobody fixed William Hurt's hair for Broadcast News, but they did it for Holly Hunter. And you think, and my bigger question for you and for the Massive is, will the extreme hairstyles of the 1980s sported by such memorable figures as Pat Sharp, Limahl at Gajigugu, Mike Peters from The Alarm. I don't know, you can probably reel off a load of your own suggestions. Will they ever come back into fashion? Because there was a time when nobody thought the 50s would ever come back into fashion, or the 60s, or the 70s, or whatever.
There have to be elements of fashion that are simply unrepeatable. And that's probably what... I think the girl who was summed up the 80s for me was Katrina of Katrina and the Waves, you know.
Yes.
Kind of great-looking girl, but she had that kind of... She wore trainers, didn't she? It was trainers... And a kind of linen
Teddy
jacket.
Teddy boy jacket, a long jacket.
Sleeves shunted up the arms. Yes. You know? And that kind of, I think it used to be known as pub hair, just kind of big curls, wasn't it?
Pub hair. Never heard that one.
Yeah, pub hair. I don't know why, just massive amounts of hair product added, you know. And will that look ever come back? I very much doubt it.
Yeah, what do you think, Alex? Have you got any favourite 80s hairdos that... you've ever been tempted to emulate?
Oh, gosh. The Johnny Marr quiff.
Oh, right. Yes, no, of course.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Playing it safe, of course. But, you know, that's peak 80s for me.
Yes.
There'll be elements of the 80s that won't come back. Leg warmers has got to be one of them.
Shoulder pads.
Headbands. Shoulder pads.
Shoulder pads play a part in the plot of Broadcast News, don't they?
Because she gives
Albert Brooks her shoulder pads to make him look better. Made him look better while reading the news.
Broadcast News is a great movie. My God, he's got some good lines. There's a bit at the end where Jack Nicholson, as the most sinister character,
Volpine.
Comes in, Volpine, precisely, and you can feel the temperature lower.
He's
there to sack 27 members of the staff. And as the boss who has to do it points out, supposedly jokingly, well, you could cut $1 million off your own salary, and then has to kind of backpedal furiously, you know. And there's a bit where he's sacking these people, and the guy says to him, at the end, "Is there anything else I can do for you?" And he says, "Well, I certainly hope you can die soon." And I thought that was a fantastic line when you've just been fired, you know.
That's a great film.
Let
me recommend to you your next one's Working Girl. I think you should really watch Working Girl. Yeah, you'd enjoy it. Anything to add?
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.